Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it's Lee Salisbury here. Welcome back to Season 5 of Soap from the Box. Sorry, it's been a bit of a break since Season 4, which was a short season. I have been making television instead of speaking about it, including the exclusive news that dropped this week that Guy Pearce, who plays Mike in Neighbours, is heading back for the relaunch of the series, and I directed the scenes with him. I can't say any more at the moment, but you have to keep listening to Soap from the Box to hear more, and possibly to hear an interview with Guy coming very soon. I will leave you with the episode that is hot off the press, recorded today for the Series 5 launch. This guy is one to watch, and he is a potential award winner in the making. Enjoy. My guest today has appeared on your screens in many things. Shadow and Bones, Agatha Raisin, Bloods. I love Bloods. The King's Man, the film, amazing, amongst many other things. Soap fans, of course, will know him for playing Eric Foster in Hollyoaks. Now get ready for this. He is the son of Charlotte and Edward Hutchinson, the brother of Verity, the half-brother of Tony and Eva, and the adoptive half-brother of Dominic Riley. His family life in the show is nothing compared to what he's been up to since arriving in 2022. This year, he is up for Best Villain at the British Soap Awards. It's not the first time, though, my acting guest has won an award. He won a Global Short in LA for Two's a Crowd. It's a huge pleasure to welcome Angus Castle-Doherty. Hello, Angus.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm good, thanks, mate. First of all, your name. Where's your name derived from?
I don't really know. So my dad's surname is Doughty. My mum's maiden name is Castle.
Oh, okay. And then so it's a bit of a combination.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mismatch. And then I was an emergency C-section, and my mum wanted to call me Finley. And when I was born, I had this fiery red hair, and the doctor had saved my life. And my mum said, well, you saved his life. What should we call him? And he said, he looks like an Angus to me.
Oh, wow. So, brilliant.
And now I've got this name that everyone thinks is really Celtic, but it's actually...
Yeah, no, it sounds really Celtic. That's what I thought, especially with Castle in the title as well.
Yeah, I mean, I wish.
And red hair.
Yeah, my dad's side of the family are from the Midlands. My mum's side of the family are from deepest, darkest Kent.
Right, and okay, so not at all what you... never judge a book by its cover, as they say.
No.
Yeah. So you are up for the Soap Awards, which we'll get to going to the Soap Awards. I mean, I've been many a times. You were up against quite a strong field, but you were up against EastEnders' Ravi Gulati, Coronation Street's Stephen Reed, Emmerdale's Al Chapman, and Doctor's Princess Buchanan. I mean, up against the princess is quite cool, but it's a strong field, isn't it? Strong competition this year.
Yeah, and like just being nominated is an honour, and I'd love to win it. I don't really think I stand much of a chance because I'm up against some behemoths. But being mentioned in the same sentence.
Yeah, I think you do stand a massive chance. I think Hollyoaks stands. I mean, you never quite... I mean, I've been to the Soap Awards obviously quite a lot of times, won a couple, and we didn't expect... I was at Emmerdale when we won nothing, and I think we won one of the first ones, but it's always a bit of a surprise. You never quite know which way it's going to go. And Hollyoaks, I think the thing with Hollyoaks, it's got such a massive young following, and the youngsters are the ones that vote.
Yeah, and I think it's just sort of self-preservation then, I guess. Because I don't know.
Yeah, you don't want to feel you're going to win, do you? Because you don't want to get... You've always got to kind of think on that. You've always got to get your... You don't want to get your winning speech ready because you feel like you're jinxing it.
And I'm not really anyone. I'm just some guy from South London who's gone and told a story for a year. And there's people in the category who have been doing the soap for years, or they have their own like fan bases. And then there's this little ginger kid being like, "Hi guys, vote for me. That'd be nice."
Well, I think what's nice though with your character as well is it's a very different, you know, I mean, nothing against Coronation Street, but it's another serial killer, about the 10th they've had. There's always a serial killer on that street. You never live there. It's that your stories, which we'll get to, are a bit different. Do you know what I mean? So it's a different kind of villain, I suppose, than what we normally see.
And I actually think it's quite, I think the story we told is quite a pressing issue.
Yeah.
And I think there's quite pressing relevance to it. But obviously not to the extent, or hopefully not to the extent that Eric goes and has gone. But I definitely think there's a whole generation of boys that could be lost if we're not careful to sort of engage.
Yeah, it's one of those storylines that is really important to youngsters. Now we'll get to those actually. But so is this your first, we'll keep the soap awards for a minute. Is this your first ever soap awards? Is it first, or did you get to go last year?
No, I did get to go last year. And I was sort of, it was sort of a whole like whirlwind of chaos that I wasn't really prepared for. I'd only done, I think I'd aired on the show for about a month or 6 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And I'd been working on the show for about 5 months. And I sort of turned up and we're in this nice hotel and everyone was all giddy and excited. And there was like a floor where everyone was getting makeup done. And I was like, well, it feels like a waste if I don't get some makeup done. So I sat down and was like, give me eyeliner. Give me all the eyeliner. No one knows who I am. And then it's my parents are, it's up in Manchester this year, and my parents are coming to watch. And they were like, oh, should we go for dinner or something? And I was like, I've got to be honest, I just seem to get dragged around and put in taxis on the
day. It's a mad, the maddest thing for me when I first went with Emmerdale was just suddenly you're with every single soap star from every single soap. And it's like, what the hell is going on? It's the weirdest experience. Because when you're in a soap, and at that point I'd only worked on Emmerdale, everyone else is kind of still like, you're like, oh my God, it's Doc Cotton. Do you know what I mean? It's a bit like that, isn't it, at first?
I remember we were in the, I guess, I don't know what you'd call it. I'm just going to call it the room with champagne in it.
Because the champagne room. Great room.
The champagne room, before going through and taking our seats. And I think his name's James Farrier in EastEnders.
Oh, yeah,
He, and that is no slight on him that I might not know his name completely. It's just my context to him is a bit different to EastEnders.
He's a theatre boy, isn't he?
Well, he's from near me.
Oh, right.
My dad used to go to this gym around the corner every day at about 6 a.m., and he would go at the same time. And I was at university at the time. And my dad was like, oh, I've got chatty with this guy who used to do Hollyoaks and now does bits of other TV, this before he joined EastEnders. And they like formed this like gym friendship over a month or so.
Wow.
And my dad was like, oh, my son, when he leaves university, wants to get into acting. Have you got any tips and stuff? And then James was like telling him how he had gone about it, I think. And then we were stood in the quote unquote champagne room. And then James walked past me and I just went, I think you know my dad. Like extreme panic. And he turned around and was like,
I think you've befriended my dad in the gym, which must have made him go, yeah. Oh, this could be embarrassing.
Used to work out with my dad.
Yeah.
That was weird. It is weird going into a room and being like, oh, I've seen these people on TV for years.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things as well, especially when I directed, I don't know whether you have this as well, is that I'm useless with learning names as well, but then suddenly on a drama, you have to learn their name and their character name. And obviously their character name has been in your head for years, whereas their real name hasn't. And I got told from day one, like, don't call them by their real, you know, by their character names, you're like, oh my God, more pressure.
Do you know what's funny? Like, the flip side of that is sometimes, like, especially with Nick and Eva.
Yes.
We would ruin takes because I would have called either Eva or Picard Nick. And you just like, and then they go, you know how quickly it moves, and they go, great, okay, moving on. And you have to go, whoa, I've just used their real name.
Yeah, because even the real name's in their heads. I mean, Elite, do you remember the, did you watch The EastEnders Live when poor Joe Joyner, who's got an amazing career, will always be remembered for calling Ian Adam?
No, but I listened to your podcast with Jason, and I remember you recounting this story, and then I went to work and recounted this story as if I had learnt it.
Oh, right, okay.
Because I met Jason in my
is this
first...
Jason Merrill's we mean, obviously. Yeah.
The brilliant Jason Merrill's.
Oh, on Agatha Raisin.
On Agatha Raisin, yeah.
And I knew him from Cutting It. He was another one that I was, there's a few I've been quite scared to work with. Not scared, you know, like you're kind of like, wow, because you really am either acting. I think on Hollyoaks, it was that, you know, obviously, Tony, Nick, who plays, because you're just like, oh my God, as if I'm working with him. On EastEnders, I was obsessed by Lacey Turner, who played Stacey. So that was quite quite bad. But okay, so let's go back to Soapboards. Otherwise, we'll be here for hours, because I can already tell we can talk for hours. So this year it's North, because just to let the listeners at home know, the inside story of the Soapboards, that now they do it 1 year in London and 1 year in Manchester, because all the soap stars complained many years ago that they were always going to London rather than coming up North. So now they do that, which means you don't need the coach or train down, but you did get that last year. Did you? What was it like on the way back? Because our journeys back on the train or the coach, I remember 1 year, Emily Simons, who played Marilyn, did have a little throw up in a carrier bag at King's Cross Station before we got on the train.
I'm so glad this is where you're going with it, because I was thinking, oh God, am I going to have to sit here and be like, it was really uplifting.
No, it's a you know, it's a celebration of a year, and that celebration involves quite a lot of champagne in the champagne room, basically.
I think I had about an hour's sleep, and I was sat.
That's good for the Soap Awards.
I sat down and keep. Funny enough, Al Fletcher is convinced this didn't happen. I walked into Euston Station, and I knew I was hungover, because I grabbed like four sandwiches, and I was just thinking, this is so much bread. And I was like sat there tearing a baguette apart, like crying into my hand. And I looked to my left, and I had my sunglasses on as well, because my eyes were so bloodshot. I just looked awful. And I looked to my left, and Al Fletcher, who plays Diane, was on the phone to her family, I guess. And she didn't see me, and probably more like importantly, she didn't smell me. And then I stumbled onto the train and like collapsed into a seat. I fell asleep, woke up. And the most heartbreaking thing about that journey home, I was still quite lonely up in Liverpool. I hadn't really like settled.
Oh. Yet.
And the hotel was in Euston, and I'm from Greenwich, and I was literally walking to, but I was first up.
You kind of wanted to go home.
I just wanted to go home and be looked after by my mum.
Yeah, and get into your bed.
But I was first up. And for like anyone who doesn't know, first up, you're the first scene of the day, so you've got to be in at like 6:45.
Oh my God, I see you had
first
the worst.
Up the next day. But that Monday at work was the best day at work. Nick Picard came in with a bag of hash browns.
Oh, amazing. It's a total 2 day hangover, the Soap Awards. I mean, it is. Oh. And I suppose this year it's going to be worse for you, because this year you'll be recognized a lot more. I mean, I remember being on the train with Mike Parr, who played, oh my God, who did he play? Ross in Emmerdale, who was kind of like the heartthrob at the time. And so we're at King's Cross, like literally dying, and everyone's like, can we have a selfie with him? And you're like, oh my God. So all of these selfies, you know, we'll be going around with him going, oh, like, can't even speak to say no.
Do you know what? I've had a few experiences where I've been hungover. A few experiences makes me sound like I've got a problem. I've had people come up to me before if I've been like really hungover or on a night out, and go, oh my God, are you in Hollyoaks? And I've always just gone, not today.
Brilliant,
not
brilliant. Today, yeah, brilliant. And you can get away with saying no. What are you wearing? Very important. I mean, question I don't care about, to be honest. Never care what people are wearing. But do you know what you're wearing? Are you stressing or are you going to, is it, are you going to wear eyeliner?
I'm not stressed about it. I just feel like I'll cobble something together. My mum.
Best attitude. Oh, he's really stressed, is she?
Who I don't know if she's become my like publicist slash
stroke stylist.
Dresser.
Yeah.
She's sending me links to like shirts to hire, which I didn't realize was like a thing. And I wasn't aware that the shirts I had weren't adequate.
Good enough. Yes. And don't hire one because they never fit. Like,
well,
my.
I was trying to explain to her. She was like, well, if you get up on that stage, and I was like, I just don't think that's going to happen, Mum. Let me live in blessed anonymity in the seat. But I've got a suit I'll wear and I'll probably jazz it up with a shirt. I think.
And I guarantee, by the way, my mum would do this. She'd probably send you like new pants and socks in the post as well, just to check that you're totally like geared up. Do you know what I mean? It's the kind of thing mums do.
I bought a new suit for the Soap Awards last year. I've done it the wrong way round. Last year
you really planned it when you weren't going to possibly go up on stage.
Yeah, you know, like when you're waiting for like news and everyone's like, oh, that's going to be really good news. And you're like, no, it's not. So you start like self-sabotaging.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I feel like there's a bit of that.
Have you practiced your, you know, well done, I didn't win, but I'm so pleased for the others, face.
The Jerry,
that's very
the
important.
Jerry Tribbiani nod. Yeah.
Yeah. I would just literally sit there and be really annoyed just to be fun rather than clap and smile. I think it'd be quite funny if you just were like, oh, I got
the gracious loser nod.
Yeah. Yes.
We were wondering because, again, people might not be aware, like, we get told where to sit.
Yes, that is important. That is a clue. You will. When I won a couple of times, I was near the end of the row. Didn't matter where you were, because the but I was near the end of the row, and someone came and checked only those two times. I mean, it'll probably be different for you because obviously I'm not famous. They checked whether Lee Salisbury was in the right seat. So there are two clues, possibly.
Right. Well, I know I'm hoping I have some strong like people either side of me who can like pinch the thigh if I'm not looking gracious enough.
Yes. Yeah. And you can give a massive wet kiss to when you get up. And finally, and we won't need to mention anything about this, Philip Schofield, you're going to be one of the first people to see Philip back on the screen. So that could be an interesting night itself. Don't think the Soap Awards is ever going to have so much attention as this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, there's a lot of eyeballs that
are
going to be.
There are this year. It's, it's a lot of people. If you win, no pressure, that speech, Angus, has got to be knock out of the park because loads of people are winning.
That's one of the things I loved so much of watching the Soap Awards last year. I really loved watching the different like genres of speech.
Yes. Yeah.
There were people who had clearly
rehearsed.
This was their 15th Soap Awards. And then there was like, it was really beautiful seeing especially the younger people who were so like overwhelmed and excited that they just word vomited.
Yeah. And they just did it in the moment as well. I do like that. I mean, the worst speech I've ever seen was
somebody from EastEnders last year who just wouldn't get off the stage. And it was brilliant. She was like, did a dance.
Stand
up routine.
Who was that? I know who you. I can't think who it was.
She won best comic performance, and she certainly earned it because I hadn't watched any of her work. But if it was
that was
like,
hilarious. Yeah, that's a pressured one to go up with best comedic. The worst speech I have to say, and I can't remember who it was from Hollyoaks, but this is many years ago. Was when they won best male, and it was a really serious speech where he went into thanking his mum and dad, and it was like, oh, this is a really. Oh. Kind of rubbish award that you're making into something really that it's not.
I know Greg told me that he won best performer a couple of years ago, and we're both Tottenham fans, and Tottenham were in the Champions League final that day, like that night in that moment, and he had sneakily been listening to it on in his earbud.
Wow.
He heard that Spurs were 2-0 down. And apparently he got up and in his speech, he was like, this is great, but Tottenham are 2-0 down. So it's sort of...
Yeah, oh, well, don't be doing that. Well, listen, we're going to go on to other things. We'll remind everyone at the end, but you can vote now for Angus to win Best Villain of the Year. It's on the 3rd of July at 7:45 p.m. I think it's live now, isn't it? I don't think they pre-record it.
Oh, last year was live, but I think this
year.
Yeah,
God, that's a dangerous game to play that, isn't it? Because again, just going back one more, my biggest question was how much you drink beforehand, because the first year... I was hung over by the end of the awards. Do you know what I mean? Because it's quite a long time. They've got them quicker and quicker, but it's that you're kind of really excited. So you want a couple of glasses of champagne. But thank God when I won, I played it carefully and didn't drink, because otherwise I thought,
well,
there'd be
nothing
worse.
I was just going to say, I think I might stay away
sober.
Until after, just because I might have one to calm the wittering. My mum she's always said I witter.
Right.
Speak really quickly and speak a lot.
Yeah, you don't want to be on for that long and not be funny and just be wittering. That's definite. Yeah. When you want another job, do you know what I mean? This is a chance to show you. Yeah.
Yeah. It's standing up there and going, and as all of you saw, I'm out of contract. So,
yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Just get your CV out. I mean, that's the best way to do it. Let's move on to Hollyoaks. I mean, move on to Hollyoaks. We're still on Hollyoaks. But Eric, I mean, entrance was part of International Women's Day. Amazing way to arrive. You arrived in the duck and in the dog and duck, even the hardest pub name to say that, the dog and duck. You can never say that drunk. And it was the first time we saw you and Verity. I mean, let's go back to your first appearance. What was it like arriving? When I worked on Hollyoaks, what I was so surprised at, and I'll say this about every soap, EastEnders was tiny, but Hollyoaks really was minuscule. I mean, everything is so on top of each other. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot that was a big difference to what I was used to. I think this is great, to be honest. I expected it to be multi-camera, firstly, just because they have to shoot so much.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, it's not. It's single camera, but that also means that there's more control over... how we did the performances in the scenes, which is nice. I was quite grateful to be working with Eva, because I, as soon as I got the job, I went up to Liverpool and stayed with my friend Connor, who actually had done an issue led storyline the year before. And I just wanted to get a feel for the city, and I met up with Eva and we had a chat and broke some ice. So I had a relationship with her before.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
So that was great. But when you do a drama, everyone starts at the same time. Everyone's excited and nervous at the same time.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But you're coming to a running train.
Yeah. You're doing this thing. I've always described doing Hollyoaks as sprinting a marathon that just will never end.
And yeah.
That was one of the saddest things about my last day, to be honest, is you just go, oh, God, well,
that's
now they carry on.
Yeah.
Leave and they keep moving. But also, my first teaser scene that I did on the show.
Because, again, obviously, we'll remind everyone, we've said this a million times on this podcast before, but obviously everything's not filmed in the right order, so you can sometimes be so well. Quick question before you get to it, did you, because most people I've had on this podcast have had to start, they always throw you in the deep end with a massive scene in the pub, with everyone there, they've not started them in a nice two-hander. Did you have the same fate?
No, I didn't actually. I did some shooting December 2021. And that was to go out in one of February's episodes. And that was a two-hander with me and Eva. And then I went back before my main contract started to... there was a scene in the pub and they were just filming me, poking my head in and going in. So it wasn't like I wasn't thrown into it. It was just me and Eva. Also, they were really... it was just before Christmas, so... The studio was quite quiet, actually. I was quite grateful that I wasn't...
So you had it nice and easy, really. I mean, as much as easy as it can be, suddenly, doing a big soap.
Yeah, although like this will make me sound like such an idiot, but when like if people don't know, when you do other TV, there's a lot of stuff that is just taken out of your hands because it's too much of a risk to leave it up to these silly little actors, I guess. And one of those things is like getting to the studio.
Yes,
And I was given my call time and I was like, cool. How do I get there? Where is it? I
Where
don't
is
know. And I've just been given a time and I don't know where I'm going. So that was like I had a bit of a panicked morning. But you quickly, I mean, you learn so
so
quickly
quick
because
because the
it's
schedule there is so mad. I mean, Hollyoaks is the craziest schedule ever because it was about 5 or 6. I'm sure it was 4 or 5 units filming when I was there. And yeah, working out when you can kind of possibly escape home or whatever is quite. I remember Gillian Telford from EastEnders when she did. She was on the train to London, and they were like, "Oh my God, why has Gillian gone to London?" You know, and she just forgot. She just missed one scene out. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of those
Yeah.
mammoth, the little things can turn things haywire in an
I
instant.
was
Hollyoaks.
I think I was known as a bit of a swot, to be honest,
Oh, were you a
because
good boy?
like
Yeah.
I would yeah, I like want
Did you
one of
color code? Did you
the
color code things and
No, it wasn't so much that as like if it's a quote unquote day off, and obviously your days off aren't your days off,
no, you're on
you're
call.
not working that day. I was in Sainsbury's, and like I don't know who I think I am. I was in Sainsbury's, like just buying some food, and the office called and asked if I could come in, and I just dropped my basket and walked out of Sainsbury's and got in
I'm on
the car and over to
Hollyoaks,
work.
everyone. I'm on Hollyoaks.
I like literally like I got there and told someone, and they were like, "Who do you think you are?"
Amazing. Running out
Like
with
I
people
thought I
going,
was
oh my
something.
God, he must have had like a, he must be a paramedic.
Yeah, I thought I was some kind of superhero.
Yeah, whereas kind of someone like Jennifer Aniston, if she got that call, would make sure she finished her shop, she'd have lunch, then she'd arrive at the studio. Do you know what I mean? There'd be no dropping Jennifer Aniston shopping. But let's so I mean the storylines are whizzed through some. I mean that you did so much within quite a short period of time, I suppose, being in a soap. But how amazing. I always think it's amazing if you go into a soap and you have such a busy storyline time rather than just drinking a pint in the pub. Do you know what I mean? So you
Yeah.
became well, the first thing he did was make an inappropriate image of teacher Olivia Bradshaw. This is where we first got an insight where his storylines were going. He then got an obsession with Cleo, locking her boyfriend Joel in the loft. Befriended Mason, but then when his girlfriend Ella rejects him, he led Mason astray. So this was the beginning of this kind of incel behavior, wasn't it? And explain what that is to people.
Yeah, so well, incel is short for involuntary celibate. And Eric and young men in general, I think there's a big issue that is multifaceted. But one of the things that we certainly looked at in the show is that during all the lockdowns, he was quite socially awkward anyway. And then
Yeah.
during the lockdowns, he was looking for comfort and a community online, and he slipped down into they call it the manosphere, which is quite misogynist based, quote unquote, men's help spaces. And the
Which, to be
problem
honest,
with
I hadn't heard of, and now I've researched you. I mean, it's quite incredible that these. Yeah, but I suppose sitting at home
Yeah,
all day
I mean,
online, you never know
my
what you
algorithm
get.
is a mess. It's my algorithm now, and like my search history is just
Mad.
like,
Yeah.
it's just men shouting
Yeah,
about help
wow.
being listened to. But those like I think part of the main issue for Eric is that everything being so digital and algorithms being the way they are, each click leads on to something more radical. And because the world is so scary and it's so complex, these spaces, these like misogynistic spaces, offer a simpler explanation to the problems that these young men have. And so there's no one challenging them. And then they use pseudoscience to back it up. And so Eric started as this socially awkward guy who just wanted to come and be with his sister and meet his brother. And then by the end, he was completely detached from reality because he had found a community that would laud him the more radical of things
he did. Yeah.
And he started convincing himself that there was a conspiracy against men in the world, which is a running theme in the manosphere. But there's some great books, and we were...
Well, it's also, to interrupt you, it's also a wider thing, isn't it? Because I think people are youngsters. You know, when we were young, we didn't sit online because online didn't exist when I was young. And so you only faced the problems that you saw in the world that you were going into every day. Do you know what I mean? Whereas now kids and younger people are sat at home, and this kind of dark world that actually they're believing is part of the life is not really... Do you know what I mean? It's actually very distant from them.
And there's very little challenging, because the other thing is it's very easy for these manosphere spaces to say, oh, if they challenge you with this, they would say that because they're part of the problem, or they're just trying to convince you otherwise, and trying to, like, the big thing, like as a weird tangent, last night I just decided to watch The Matrix again because I thought, I love the fighting scenes in The Matrix. That's cool. And the soundtrack. And I actually found myself feeling a bit uncomfortable watching it, because a lot of The Matrix, a lot of the language used in The Matrix has been adopted by...
That's interesting.
Describe this feminist conspiracy theory against men.
Right, okay.
So they have language like red pill and blue pill and black pill, and the red pill is awakening to the truth, and the blue pill would be me and you who don't believe there's a conspiracy.
How weird is this? I just watched an old episode of Fresh Meat before we did this podcast, and they were talking about the red pill and the blue pill.
Right. Weird. Yeah.
You watched Matrix, I watched that. Like, yeah.
But it was... Playing the part was an interesting exercise, because by the time we came to the hour-long special that I did with Duncan Foster,
I felt
like I had so much energy inside me that I was ready to, like, just explode.
Yeah.
And I had to, it was a real exercise in patience, like pacing myself, especially for the first 6 months, of just playing this guy who doesn't feel comfortable in his surroundings. And it can be quite, like, still.
Did you know where it was going? Did you know your full kind of arc when you went in?
I knew, I mean, like, as with all these things, I knew the general, that it would end with an event. And then it was around just after the Soap Awards last year, actually, that I started hearing that it would be this siege with a crossbow. But you knew that it was going to go start somewhere, and
you must have been, as an actor, excited to know what that final thing was going to be as well. It's that you must have been going, what's it going to be?
Lucy Allen walked up to me in the hall.
Who is the producer, isn't she? Series producer. Yeah.
She walked up to me in the hall of the studio and was just like, "What do you like with a crossbow?" And I was like,
"Well, I'm no Orlando Bloom, but Lucy, I might be able to.
Now I'm going to follow you until you give me all the information."
You can't leave me with that little nugget.
Yeah, but it was exciting. It was also, there's a human cost to it, because, like, the people in the room in the special were all friends of mine. So they would go off, and between takes, they would go sit in...
And just be normal.
...area and be normal people. And I would go off into the corner of a different room, just because it felt so uncomfortable to, like, point this crossbow at my friends.
Yeah. It's weird, isn't it? Because it's not, we know what method acting for anyone who doesn't is, when you really encapsulate the role and do it all the time. But that's not quite method, but it is. Like, I've worked on big scenes and big stories where an actor being in your position has to kind of... it's almost impossible to snap. I mean, any Patsy Palmer in my life I've watched be able to do it, where you can just snap in, snap out so quickly on set. You know, you have to stay there for when you've got those massive days, don't you?
Yeah, and like me and Al Fletcher were having this conversation about it starts before you get to work. So, like, I would be listening to the music and stuff on the way into work, because...
To get hyped up and to get into his mind.
You can't really snap in and out of it. And also, but that said, like, you don't have to do it all day. And Duncan was really good at telling me when my coverage would be. So when the camera turned around, I would still perform it, but I wouldn't live it.
Yes.
So
I
could also rest off with my friends and stuff, because I wouldn't have to put myself through the torment. I was really like shocked at how, and it's a testament to how much energy and emotion builds up over a year. I was really shocked to how much I found myself crying on the day.
Like, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, God, like, and I think this is a soap thing, but the lines get blurred throughout a year. Like, you're like, am I lonely or is the character lonely? Am I sad or is the character sad?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But yeah, that was certainly a big release. And I was really proud of that special and where we went with it.
And then obviously one of the big storylines that went on for ages with was with Maxine, Nikki Sanderson, of course, who's amazing. I used to love working with soap legend really now, because Corey was that one must have been good as well, though. That was a really good partnership, wasn't it?
Yeah, soap legend, personal legend, legend all around. Nikki is great, and she's so generous with her time and with
and she's always very prepared as well. She's very swotty. She's very good, isn't she?
Yeah, and it's great. Like when you're doing a big storyline that's like a feud between two people, just feeling like your teammate is
really in it as well. Yeah,
it's great. And we would like, I always felt a bit guilty because I'd be like, I'd ask for rehearsals, and there's an element of it of being like, God, she's just worked this 12-hour day, and then they've scheduled an hour-long rehearsal for this scene. For after, but she would always be bang up for it, and like it was great, and she's so protective of the space. Like when you're kind of, especially if you're tapping into something heavy and emotional, she won't let the scene start, and she'll protect your space to like get into the right zone, and yeah, she's just the best teammate. And I think she really deserves to have the level of light shining on her at the moment.
She does. She's a kind of unsung hero in a way. I mean, she's a sung hero, but kind of one of those people that deserves a lot more credit for what she does. I think it's like Jane Danson in Corrie quite recently, like last year, was really highly praised. And I did a Cotter storyline with Charlotte Bellamy, plays Laurel in Emmerdale, and it was the first time everyone went, oh wow, she's really good. And you're like, yeah, she's been really good for years.
Yeah, I also think Nikki's just so she's so work and storytelling focused that I think she's quite unassuming.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, which is lovely as well. To retain that is actually lovely.
Yeah, and she really deserves this moment, and I really hope that at the Soap Awards she's up for best dramatic performance. But I really hope she gets the
she wins it. Let's hope. I was going to say, unlike, would she drop her shopping in Sainsbury's and run out? I mean, I think she might finish her shopping.
Nikki's Sainsbury's would be halfway to Manchester, so she'd drop her Sainsbury's, run out, and get there. Whereas mine was 10 minutes away from the studio.
So oh, right, yeah.
Different levels of commitment.
Yeah, amazing. So, I mean, we could talk about Hollyoaks all day. We'll finish. Obviously, it did spiral. There was a siege in the pub. You even shot Diane, another soap legend. I mean, again, hard to say goodbye. What was your final scene? Again, what's so hard, and people listening, is often that big, dramatic, emotional scene is like week one of the two-week block, or on Hollyoaks, a four-week block, whatever it is. And, you know, like the last scene might be a really unassuming, rubbish scene, kind of in the cafe ordering a coffee. Like, brilliant, that's their last scene for so-and-so, and it's awful.
Yeah, I had a bit of a weird... So my proper last day was like a really big sort of three-hander with me, Nikki, and Greg.
Oh, okay.
And it was like quite heavy and exhausting, and it was a full every scene of the day kind of shoot. And we did like for those that don't know, the producers come down and give you like nice words of encouragement and thank you, and it's all very lovely, and everyone gives you a round
flowers. Of applause. Did you get some flowers or a...
I got some flowers. That, lovely. Like, I was wondering if I was getting pollen bombed because I had the worst hay fever of my life. I was just sat.
Sprayed you with extra hay fever. I was in my room and I was like, work.
I was in my room with like all this pollen in my eyes and I was like, God, those flowers are beautiful, but they need to leave. But my actual, like, what ended up being my last day is they had to get an additional shot like 2 days later. So I had to go and then they'd already done the goodbye speech and stuff. And
here he is again.
Went to go do it again. And I was like, cool. Well, I'll probably see you guys tomorrow. I'll see you later. But it was nice. I think one of the difficult things was that the big special with Duncan really felt like
the end,
apex of the storyline. And that felt like a real climax to finish on. And then we had the rest of this story in the prison. And it was just like, it felt like there was one ending and then another ending. And I think, yeah, it was a bit different because the first time I ended, I like was with Nick and I just like, With the last bit in the prison, I would do scenes where characters would come visit me in prison and we'd realise that was the last time we were going to work together. And that happened quite a lot. And it's quite a slow, sad thing. And then you finish and you realise everyone's going off to their next scene.
Yeah, that's what I suppose, again, when you do a play or when you do a drama, everyone finishes at the same time and goes to their next job, whereas you're leaving again, you're like jumping off a running train that everyone else is continuing on. So it's like, oh, bye. And actually, we all know what TV's like. Like for a day, they might miss you, but then it's kind of like business as usual.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I did my last scene and then I had to go do the photo shoot for the Soap Awards immediately after. And then I had the whole next half of the day and I sat in the car and I was like, what do I do now?
Like, yeah, well, it's quite a serious thing as well. We've had quite frank discussions on this with some people who didn't choose to leave as well after quite a long time. And it actually went kind of quite downhill because especially if you've been in, you know, Emmerdale for 10 years and you're really recognised, it's quite hard to adjust to normal life again and it's not even people that wanted the fame, but it's just very much then you feel personally like you're not wanted anymore. It's kind of a weird adjustment to make, which is quite
I was going into one storyline and I always knew it was going to be one storyline. And actually I only ever wanted to.
Yeah. So you could set that, your mind was set for that really.
But the thing that like I had been coming to terms with for the months after was that so much of your day to day when you're more freelancing is the like hunger and anxiety and like keeping moving and keeping active and doing things and like emailing people. And for 14 months, I didn't have to do that. There'd be no reason to do that. So I've had to then find my feet again as to like how I operated and how I feel.
Yeah, get the hunger back and get the kind of daily routine back. Yeah. Well, let's quickly go on to you to end the podcast. We always need to talk about you. I'll just read, just found your CV. I don't know if this is still true. I think it was a few years old. I do love actor CVs. Age range playing was 22 to 32, 5'9", red hair, brown eyes, muscular build, baritone voice. You graduated from Warwick University with a first class degree in English literature and theatre studies. Now, I got told, and I'm probably going to only say this because I got what's after a first? A T1. I got told if you got a first, you hadn't lived and partied enough at university. Is that true? Did you live and party enough?
But I've got to be honest. I went to Warwick University and there's not a lot going on.
Oh, right. Okay. So, So that still rings true then. That basically.
I also was like, I'm going to university. I'm just so like target and mission orientated.
Which is great.
I wanted to get first.
I wanted to get first. So I only use that as my excuse. Do you know what I mean? Because I only got 2-1. But your additional skills are quite impressive as well. Ski racing, water polo, tennis, cricket, mono skiing, mountain biking and diving. I mean, I always love this when actors come in with their spotlight and it's like the best story. I don't know whether I've told this on this podcast before, is Amanda Donahoe came into Emmerdale. They asked her, you know, like film star, but in Lie Lie with Jim Carrey, can you ride a horse? Of course I can ride a horse. First scenes, ride a horse. She came on set, couldn't ride a horse. Had to get a double in. They'd never lie on your spotlight CV.
I think quite a few people have done that. But I...
You can do all of those things, though.
Yeah, well, I was a national ski racer for like...
Wow.
5, 6 years, from the age of 11 till 17-ish, I guess. So, yeah, that one's actually not a lie. Although there doesn't seem to be many jobs coming through with
that as an essential skill. Yeah.
Being a ski racer is
I mean, maybe help. People don't know. We've just highlighted that now. So this could be... Today yeah, could hopefully. Be the day that you get, a stump spectacular film script with that in. You also founded the Incognito Theatre Company with four others. Is that still going? Is that still something you do?
That is going. We did a play in, when was it? April. We did our silly little play about a badminton team.
I remember seeing the picture of that. Yeah.
And funnily enough, last year I actually managed to squeeze a run in May. We did it at Park Theatre.
Amazing.
The problem is that everyone's off doing different things.
Other things and, are getting you together.
And we don't really, we don't have that much money as a theatre company.
Yeah.
There was a period of time just before the pandemic hit, we were about to embark on a four-month tour with like 35 different venues. And that would have ended at Edinburgh Festival. And we were going to do our adaptation of All Quiet on the Western Front and The Net Kill as a two-hander. And that would have set the company up
for
a few years. And then, because of the pandemic, we couldn't do that. And now we seem to go and we'll do a show somewhere and we just lose money. It doesn't matter how many tickets we sell. So we've got to be really careful. And now we do it like for fulfillment for ourselves.
Yeah.
Really, I want to like turn the theatre company into a TV or film production company.
I can tell you that's just as hard to make money from as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a tough, like people see obviously you being in Hollyoaks and stuff, but it's a tough, like both sides of the camera, you know, but like, you can ride high as a freelance, but then you can have some like quite low times as well of not working, which I think all us creative people always need to be working to be happy.
Yeah. And like I wrote our new play for the theatre company 6 weeks ago. And it's
brilliant.
Trying to get the boys to like meet up and do a read through. Like I say, because again, a lot of this is pandemic led. Two of the boys aren't actors anymore and so have other jobs. And one of them is really busy doing spoken word poetry and acting. I've been doing Hollyoaks. Our producer has a great job somewhere else. I don't know what it is. One of the other boys is freelance acting. So it's sort of, we're just all tricky, spread apart.
Well, I suppose it's good for you being in Hollyoaks. I mean, the great thing about doing soap is suddenly it does get bums on seats as well, you know, because you are suddenly known to a nation.
But a few of the Hollyoaks fans came to the show and one of them, Lockie, brought me a Tottenham teddy bear, which sits proudly on my mantelpiece.
Amazing. See, that's another benefit of doing soap. You get amazing fans giving you presents.
Yeah, you get a free Tottenham teddy bear just to remind me how terrible my football club is.
Brilliant. Right. Well, listen, I could talk to you all day, which normally happens on here, but we're going to end with a quick fire quiz. This is just random questions for series 5. Nothing to do with soap, actually. So here we go. Just don't think too much. Salty or sweet?
Sweet.
Danny or Kylie?
Kylie.
Philip or Holly? Got to be current.
Holly.
All the way. Speedos or shorts?
Shorts.
EastEnders or Corrie?
EastEnders.
Strawberries or cream?
Cream.
And naughty or nice?
Nice.
Nice. There we go. Good answers. Nothing shocking in there.
I've just got a crowbar this in here because...
Go on.
Frankly, So my lovely partner, Neve Blackshaw, she was long-listed for best performer.
And Neve is who you got together with in Hollyoaks.
Yeah.
In real life, yeah.
She plays Juliet, and she's been doing some of the best work I've ever seen over the past year. Unfortunately, she didn't get shortlisted for the Soap Awards, but she's also long-listed for the best serial drama performer.
Oh, well, come on then, everyone. Let's do a double. Yeah.
So she's up for that in the NTAs, and I really would like
to that's incredible. To be up for that at the NTAs is absolutely brilliant. You'll be the, let's make you the new Judy, Richard and Judy of TV by both winning awards.
Yeah. Although I read books way too slowly. So I don't think we could do the Desert Island.
You couldn't do their book club. No.
No. Neve can stream through about 4 books in a day. And I'm
wow.
like,
wow.
The black,
that's
brown
annoying. That's annoying. It's annoying to have a partner who can do. Luckily, my husband takes 10 times longer than me. So I feel like, yes, I'm such a fast reader.
I'm just too dyslexic. I can't like.
Oh, there we go. Well, you've got an excuse then.
Yeah. Although, like, I remember, like, Harry Potter to me has always been the films, because when I was at school, everyone would be reading the books and I'd be so dyslexic that I was like,
oh, those books are so thick. I mean, it has that. Yeah, that puts me off in the shop. Do you know what I mean? If a book's that thick, it's like, that's never going to happen. And they sit there. And then what I do is normally only read before I go to bed, and I read the same page again. It goes, I fall asleep and then I forget what I've read.
Yeah, I once, when I was doing my degree, I was reading a play before going to sleep. And I went into my seminar in the morning, and my seminar tutor that day was called, she's called Carol Rutter, and Carol is like one of the leading names in Shakespeare in the UK, and she's terrifying. And she's very lovely, but my God, her brain is the most intimidating thing in the world. But she was like, okay, so who wants to talk about the play? And I like really proudly put my hand up, and I was like, I will absolutely talk about this. And I was like, the thing I found really strange was how they all departed the earth at the end of the play. And everyone looked at me and was like, what are you talking about? I had fallen asleep midway through the play and then dreamt.
Oh, no, and thought you got through it. Not to do in front of her as well.
Yeah, it was a bad seminar, that. I don't think I styled it out.
No, well, you definitely, well, don't do anything like this at the Soap Awards, okay? You know. We need a one-to-one fucking training. Oh, I keep swearing. Sorry, let me say that again. We need a one-to-one training session. Right, listen, I mean, literally, we could go on all day, which would be amazing. We could do like an hour special every week, me and Angus. But yeah. Good luck for the Soap Awards. Everyone vote for you. Everyone vote for your lovely partner, Neve, at the NTAs. Soap Awards, 3rd of July, 7:45 p.m. Best villain, Glynis Barber's even on the side. Do you know Glynis?
I've had a few conversations with her, yeah.
Have you? Yeah, well, she's all on side for you as well. So she's championing Angus to win. It's been amazing to have you on the podcast. Thank you for coming on Soap from the Box, mate.
Thank you for having me, mate.
I'm not sure I might be there at the Soap Awards. So if I am, I'll be cheering you on this year. But otherwise, if you win, obviously come back and we'll celebrate in style. We're going to have a Soap from the Box week special.
Give me a shout if you're there, because I'll be there in a suit and a shirt, my mum.
I'll see you in the champagne room.
Yeah, in the champagne room.
Our new room that we've invented. It basically does everything else as well. You can get a cheap cider. All right, Angus, take care, mate.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to Angus for being my first guest on episode 1 of season 5 of Soap from the Box. Remember to vote for him. Vote everything Hollyoaks. Vote everything all the soaps. Who do you think deserves to win? But we have to give a push to Angus. Vote now on the British Soap Awards website and watch that later in the year. I will be back next week. There are so many more amazing guests to come. Remember, check out wherever you get your podcasts, and you can listen to all 4 seasons of Soap from the Box. All your favourite stars from all the biggest shows. Have a brilliant week in the sun, and I will see you next week.